with Thomas Mertz, followed by Don Severson.
Good evening. I'm here tonight to thank you for considering the resolution in support of A Penny for Kids. For those of you who aren't familiar, A Penny for Kids is a campaign by the Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools to get the legislature to enact a dedicated sales tax for education. I think we all recognize the need for stable and sustainable education funding. I look at your agenda tonight, and I'm going to be very short because your agenda is so full. And I see many good things. I see efforts to improve talent and gifted education in our district. I see positive behavior support. I see four-year-old kindergarten. And we all know that we can't achieve these without sufficient resources. I sat here with many of you listening to Representative Pocan, and I've talked to many of you about the need for leadership on school funding. We're looking to you for leadership on this. We're not finding it elsewhere, and we have to be our own leaders, and you have to help us do that. And by passing this resolution would be a very important first step. We also heard Representative Pocan talk about the need for revenue, that revenue has to be on the table as part of any reform. Penny for Kids is the only campaign going on now that is trying to put revenue on the table. No one else is doing it. School Finance Network is not talking revenues. The Wisconsin Association of School Boards is not talking revenues. The Wisconsin Alliance for Excellent Schools, Penny for Kids campaign are the only people who are putting revenues on the table. Now, I want to be clear that this is not the big fix for school funding, but it does create progress in some very meaningful ways, and it helps meet the crisis. You're looking at a 15% cut in state funding in this last budget. You just endured one. Penny for Kids can help with that. But in important ways, it also moves us forward towards a better school funding system. And I want to particularly point to the proposal as it currently stands initiates a categorical aid for children in poverty, something the state has needed for a long time and something that the Madison District will benefit from. And children in poverty around the state will also. So for those in the audience who want to learn more, visit apennyforkids.org. And again, thank you for considering this resolution, and I do hope you pass it.
Thank you very much. Next is Don Severson, followed by Carol Kimmel.
Thank you. I'm Don Severson, representing Active Citizens for Education. The Board of Education is urged to vote no on the proposal to implement four-year-old kindergarten in the foreseeable future. In behalf of the public, we cite the following support for taking this action of rejection of the proposal. The board and administration, one, has failed to conduct complete due diligence with respect to recognizing the community delivery of programs and services. There are existing bona fide entities and potential future entities with capacities to conduct these programs. Two, is not recognizing that the Constitution and statutes of the state of Wisconsin authorizes a provision of public education for grades K-12, not including pre-K or four-year-old kindergarten. Has not demonstrated the district capacity or the responsibility to manage effectively the funding support that it has been getting for existing K-12 programs and services. The district does not meet existing K-12 needs, and it cannot get different results by continuing to do business as usual with the same service budget year after year after year. Four, will abrogate your fiduciary responsibility by violating the public trust and promises made to refrain from starting new programs in exchange for support of the community partnership urge for passing the recent referendum to raise the revenue caps. The Board of Education is also urged to vote no to signing the Memorandum of Understanding with the State of Wisconsin for the RTT funding program. In behalf of the public, we cite the following support for taking this action to reject signing the RTT MOU. The Board and Administration 1 does not have complete information as to the requirements, criteria, expectations, and definitions of terms of the MOU or its material exhibits. Therefore, there has been serious inhibitors in time, effort, and due diligence to examine, understand, and discuss the significant implications and consequences of pursuing such funding. 2, does not have an understanding through the conduct of interactive discussions regarding the roles and relationships of the Board of Education, the administration, and the union regarding the requirements of the MOU, as well as any subsequent implications for planning, implementation, evaluation, and results to receive the funding. Three, must understand that the Board of Education and the board alone, by a majority vote, is the only authority which can bind the district in any action regarding the MOU and subsequent work plan. District participation cannot be authorized by the board if such participation is contingent on actual or implied approval now or in the future of any other parties, i.e. district administration and or the union. Four, does not have an understanding of its personnel capacity or collective will to establish needs, priorities, and accountabilities for undertaking such an enormous and complicated sea change in ways in which the district conducts its business. And five, and last, thank you, must also understand and be prepared for the penalties and reimbursements due to the state and federal governments for failure to comply with the provisions attached to any authorized funding, including expected results. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carol Kimmel, followed by Lynn Edelson.
Good evening. I'm Carol Kimmel with the League of Women Voters of Dane County, and I believe it was maybe last February I was here, four-year-old kindergarten, when it was first introduced to the board. And my statement today is short, because I'm not really speaking to the board, because we understand your background, you're supportive of the program, and that you need to deliberate now the cost. And this is what I'm speaking to, mainly for those in the audience who read the Wisconsin State Journal on Saturday, but did not understand the savings, which the article did not approach at all. Just maybe increase in taxes until the fourth year. First, I want to alert you to the article which I mentioned. Nowhere does it explain how the district will begin to save money even the first year, if not the second year. A Wisconsin report shows for every dollar invested in quality 4K, a school district could save 68 cents in educational savings. This does not take into account community savings, for example, the stress on the juvenile justice system. However, raising taxes versus saving money is not the critical issue of why 4K for the Madison School District cannot wait. Last year, the United Way reported that 42% of the Madison Metropolitan School District children entering kindergarten did not have the appropriate skills level to be successful. We need to begin serving these four-year-olds now. We've waited far too long, and many children have suffered because of this. Not only to benefit the children with inadequate skill levels, this four-year-old kindergarten, but it will also help their classmates who will have less time with their teacher because of other students who do not have the necessary skills to be successful. More research, which we have in our resource materials from the League, to bolster this argument is, for example, academic assessment information categorized by students' economic status showed that the performance of both poor and non-poor students improved between the fall of 2003 pretest and the spring post-test. But at both points, the scores of poor children were below their non-poor peers. This is from the SWEEP study. And just one last thought. 80% of the school districts in Wisconsin now provide four-year-old kindergarten. Madison Metropolitan School District needs to be part of this wonderful effort to improve the lives of all our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Lynn Adelson, followed by Sarah Dill.
Good evening. I'm Lynn Adelson. I'm representing the UW-Madison campus child care system. We have seven centers, all of whom would provide care for four-year-olds. My message is very short, and we may regret saying this. There is a lot of work to do, but I have to agree with our colleague, Carol Kimmel. We are deeply committed to serving low-income kids. We desperately want on campus to make high-quality care available for low-income children. We really want to serve them on campus. We really want them to be served within high-quality settings. The timing of this is not perfect, as you know and you've heard, and there's a lot of discontent with that, and we feel some of that ourselves, but I don't think it trumps our commitment to 4K. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Sarah Dill, followed by David Stockwell.
Good evening. I'm Sarah Dill. I'm the director of Meeting House Nursery School, a program that served children for 60 years and currently serves 43-year-olds, which will roll into our 4-year-old kindergarten program next year. I'm here to tell you that I am very much in favor of 4-year-old kindergarten for our young children in Madison. The thing that I am struggling with at this point is that the timeline established back in November by the community group has been adjusted, and the reason that timeline was set was it was a very thoughtful discussion to allow community sites to be able to follow their current program registration and budget processes. I've worked on this initiative for 8 years now. When it first started, I was back with the Eli group, and I very much want to see it to move forward. But for a program such as ours that set its budget last week and is looking to enroll children next week and not knowing whether or not our proposal to be a partnering agency will be accepted until March causes deep, deep concern for us and our program and whether or not we would be able to be a partnering agency for the 2010-2011. I urge the board to please look at the financing and please look at establishing 4-year-old kindergarten 2011-2012. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is David Stockwell, followed by Paul Berger-Dernbaugh.
Good evening. My name is David Stockwell. I'm the father of Elliot Stockwell, a third grade student at Randall Elementary. This semester has been a horrible experience for my child because his academic needs have not been met. The classroom environment.
Excuse me one sec. Could you just pull the microphone up a little bit? It's hard to hear you.
Is this better?
That's great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Should I start over?
Go ahead.
All right. His academic needs have not been met. The classroom environment is chaotic and not conducive to learning. But most importantly, he has been mistreated and emotionally harmed by his teacher. The situation is intolerable and must change in our child's best interest. Elliot's needs, academic needs have not been met despite our family's best efforts to communicate with the school system. The level of work that he's been doing in math, reading, and writing has been the same that it was 2 years ago. Elliot has self-advocated by asking for harder work. We as parents have met with the teacher, the TAG coordinator, and the principal to highlight the issue. In response, we have heard that the curriculum is satisfactory and that it can't be changed because there are too many kids in the class for the teacher to handle meaningful differentiation. The lack of action and dismissive responses clearly goes against Randall's mission statement, which states in part, Randall shall provide curriculum designed to meet every student's needs and set high expectations to enable all students to reach their potential. Second, the classroom environment is chaotic and highly disruptive, which inhibits the student's ability to learn. It is so noisy and disruptive that Elliot asked to work in the hall on his own to concentrate. References to how the teacher couldn't effectively teach due to disruption and misbehavior of the class were documented in newsletters sent back home to the parents. In response to our concerns, we have heard that this is how the standard classrooms operate and that Elliot will just have to bear it. This statement is inconsistent with the controlled behavior in a positive environment of other classrooms my children have attended. Thirdly, and most importantly, Elliot has been harmed by the situation and the management techniques of his teacher. In December, the teacher singled Elliot out for humiliation in front of the class. She asked the class to raise their hands if they thought Elliot was annoying. She then held him up to the room as an example of bad behavior. The action caused irreparable harm to his relationship with the teacher and any trust that had existed between them, a perception that the teacher sanctioned negative treatment of Elliot, thus negatively affecting the way his classmates interact with him, and significant harm to his emotional state to the point he worries about going to school and how else he may be hurt. The principal and the TAG coordinator have stressed that they believe Elliot should go back and return to the classroom. They believe that he will grow from this adversity of dealing with someone who's mistreated him and will make him a classroom leader. Elliot does not feel safe with this option and is greatly concerned and worried about returning to a situation that caused him harm. This event and situation go against the very mission statement of Randall, which states in part that Randall shall provide a caring, safe, and respectful environment. It is our position as parents that we will not allow our 8-year-old son, Elliot, to go back into the hostile and destructive work environment. Can I finish?
Finish up.
Thank you. Gone back in this hostile and destructive classroom environment, we've copied the board on a recent email communicating our stance. Superintendent Neerad, Board of Education, I implore you to help correct the situation by exerting your power and influence to move Elliot to a different third grade class at Randall. I ask this as a voter who requires help from his elected officials, a taxpayer who is at best paying for a service that I'm not receiving, and at worst is paying for a service that's harming our child, but most of all as a parent whose duty it is to ensure the safety and well-being of our child. Please help correct this intolerable situation and provide the right environment for the school system to meet its mission and duty of providing an education that meets Elliot's needs in a safe and respectful environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Superintendent, will someone follow up?
We definitely will follow up on what we've just heard, and I'll have a discussion with staff tomorrow morning about it.
Thank you very much.
And if you could please leave your telephone number with us, please.
Our next speaker is Paul Berger Dernball, followed by Bonnie Berger.
If I may, I would like to give my time to anybody else, to David and anybody else who'd like to speak.
I'm sorry, I can't.
I'd like to give my time to David. I was here to give my time to David or anybody else who wants to speak about TAG, if that's okay.
Okay.
Or well, Bonnie.
So you're Paul?
Yes.
And you're donating your time to Bonnie? So you're going to speak for 6 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. We have done that before with this group at committee meetings. And
if not, what I can do is I can just pass it to the next person, because we have about 13 people here who are here to support each other. So if I run out of my time, I can just pass it to them and they can read from it. It's 3 pages. I'm not sure how long it might take. It might take about 7 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. Those of you who came to the November 17th TAG Plan Forum know that there were many TAG concerned parents who attended, way more than the administration anticipated or they could comfortably be held in the space that was chosen. I think this underestimation reflects how the district sees TAG needs in general. I don't know if you are aware of the level of frustration that has been growing since that forum. People came to their forum already frustrated because their children's needs were not being met. Since then, I have been hearing from quite a few parents who are on the edge of leaving. In the past month, 3 parents, and actually now it's 4, I know of 3 parents with children at, well, actually 4 different schools who were told point blank by teachers or principals that MMSD cannot address their children's advanced academic needs. And these children are not extreme, but very, very bright kids. I've even heard of staff, out of concern and conscience, telling parents to check out Eagle and Country Day, but that is just not going to happen here. This is intolerable. Public school can't address the needs of very bright kids. All means all, and must include these kids too. I have 3 main concerns regarding education for advanced learners that I would like to bring to your attention. First, the disconnect between the administration and the highly frustrated parents of TAG kids. We are on different timelines. The timeline parents have is their kids growing up. They have only that one shot. If things can't be improved significantly in a short time, and for kids that's a matter of a school year or at most 2 years, then I think you should seriously consider providing vouchers to the private schools, because you must start meeting these kids' needs. Parents are also frustrated by what we perceive as a passive attitude toward the urgent need for change in cultural attitudes about TAG among the staff and administration. It must happen in a more active way than by the passage of time and eventual attrition of currently resistant staff. Second, the issue of equity. I know that at times it is necessary to supplement. I know how to supplement. I can afford some of it. And kids who are in the top 2%, I believe, are almost always supplemented. They have to have learned their information somewhere. Their parents have resources, including that of confidence in their children's ability, that leads them to advocate. But kids who are from disadvantaged homes, no matter how high their potential, are likely not going to be in that top 2%. Because they are not being given enough rigor during the school hours. And if they aren't getting it at home, where will they? How will they be the future doctors and lawyers and leaders? Surely a more expanded definition of TAG and appropriate curricula is needed for more than just the top 2%. Open it up to the top 15% and you will be including more disadvantaged kids and not adding to the inequality they have in life.
Okay, Miss, one sec, okay? So that was 3 minutes. So that was your husband's 3 minutes?
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And now you're doing your three
My
minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. And then there's another person after me.
Okay.
And of course, wealthier families whose children are not being educated at the appropriate level of their for their needs have more opportunity to leave, move to the suburbs, homeschool if they don't work full-time, put their kids in private schools. So if MMSD does not provide for all the kids' needs and soon, it exacerbates this inequity. Third, and this is my biggest concern, the model MMSD is applying to TAG is really a special ed model. I realize that some TAG kids are twice exceptional, having concurrent special ed needs, and also that extremely gifted kids do require a special education. But what I'm talking about is a pervasive dogmatic pedagogy that has permeated everything in MMSD but does not work well for TAG kids. One of the questions parents have asked repeatedly is, asked you folks and asked staff, asked administration, what happens when best practices for TAG education conflict with practices that are considered desirable for other groups? Will what is selected for TAG be bent and molded and manipulated to fit the existing pedagogy? Now, I do understand that MMSD has an unusually high number of autistic and other special needs children, partly because of the Weissman Center that we have here, and they have needs to be met. So special ed and pedagogies that favor that, such as heterogeneous classrooms, have been a high priority here. We even have Beth Moss, who comes directly from the special ed parent group that advocates for special ed children's needs on the board. So obviously it's big stuff here indeed. But there is also, there is an especially large population of very bright kids in Madison too, and their needs are suffering. Here are some areas that I am highly concerned that the current orientation will adversely affect TAG. Regarding the search for a TAG, for a district TAG coordinator, how can we believe that MMSD will really recruit and attract a TAG coordinator who is truly steeped in best practices for TAG research? My doubt is based on the following concerns. The first concern is the district has not even resolved what will happen when different groups have conflicting needs. And in fact, the TAG plan, as you know, was illegally changed to accommodate existing pedagogy. It has been changed back, thank you, in response to parents' complaints, but the underlying conflict that led to its manipulation has not been addressed. In addition, the existing TAG coordinator's background in education is not in TAG, it's in special ed. That's not a problem, but in terms of being a TAG coordinator, and in terms of recognizing someone who has a vision for TAG, just in general in our administration, from a practical standpoint, given the philosophical orientation, will it be possible to recognize someone with a real vision who can turn the district around for advanced learners, or will instead someone who fits the district's currently limited pedagogy be chosen? Okay.
Okay.
And then the next person.
So your time is up?
And then there's one more person.
And who is that?
The person who's next after me.
Celeste Roberts?
It might be Celeste, yeah. No, it is Celeste. Celeste, you want to come up and stand with me? Thank you. And I'm almost done, but.
How many are into this little?
There's 13 of us, but several of us are speaking. And there's about maybe 5 people who aren't of us.
Okay, so how many people are you speaking for?
My husband, myself, Celeste, and then Amy.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And I have one more page after this paragraph.
Yep.
The MMSD's working model for TAG identification and services is based on the model for special ed. Children will be identified, then a TAG resource teacher will work with parents, staff, etc., to create an individual plan for that specific child similar to the special ed IEP. This may work for children with Downs or autism. It may be necessary to create a very individualized plan for each. But if you apply it to TAG, it is and will continue to be impossible in a district like ours with such a large population of bright kids who are not getting their needs met. You can't provide an IEP for everyone. We hear the argument from you, there isn't the money. When that changes, we can accommodate your kids' needs. But I argue to you that the problem lies in using a special ed model of individual care. And of course, using this model, the administration wants to, the administration has to, define TAG as narrowly as possible if you're using that model. So I see that using a special ed model affects even how TAG is defined and who would receive appropriate curricula. It would be much simpler, more economical, more equitable, a more efficient use of staff, and finally, consistent with TAG best practices, to simply skill group advanced children and provide those advanced classes with appropriate level curricula and teachers. It would be a more realistic requirement for the teachers as well, who are currently and impractically expected to differentiate to 5 grade levels in a heterogeneous classroom. And you heard from Dave Stockwell, it's not working in classrooms where that range is even broader, but 5 is a lot right there. In addition to being academically appropriate, it would also be emotionally healthier for TAG learners, and I say this based on research. I would like to close with 5 specific requests. Number 1, it is important to start the national search for a highly qualified TAG coordinator now. This is an urgent matter in order to get the best pool of applicants and not risk missing the national window. 2, please create a TAG coordinator search committee that includes people knowledgeable in TAG education. And we have several living in and near Madison, including Carol Trone, Carol Mason, Mary Olsky, Pam Klinkenbeard, and several child psychologists who specialize in talented and gifted, as well as include parents of TAG students. And please give these educators and parents a say in the process. 3, please broaden the definition of TAG from the top 2% to the top 15% so that it includes an emerging talent pool. Please, 4, please stop applying the special ed model of individual care rather than grouping to TAG education. It is neither feasible nor consistent with TAG best practices to do so. Applied only to the extreme cases, and for the rest, provide flexible skill grouping, appropriate teachers, and rigorous curricula. I have only one more point to make.
And are you finishing up as Amy?
Amy, yes.
Okay.
You absolute, 5. Now I'm Amy. 5, you absolutely must show firm leadership where best practices for TAG conflict with the district's currently entrenched pedagogy and not where best practices for TAG conflict with the district's currently entrenched pedagogy and not let TAG best practices be manipulated or disregarded. Until you address this underlying ongoing conflict, there will be no peace in this district. I beg you to recognize the urgency and frustration we feel and that it is not just a few parents who are experiencing this. Please take a very active role in leading this district forward. And this ends the speech by Paul, Bonnie, Celeste, Amy, and a few others that just came along.
Excuse me, you said quite a bit. Is it possible to send that document to us?
Paul has some.
Okay, thank you. Okay, our next speaker is Lori Rayala, followed by Roger Hayes.
I want to share a few items on grouping from TAG research and several TAG myths because we feel they have not been fully recognized in the schools, as Bonnie was saying. In March 2009, the National Association for Gifted Children issued a position paper intended for school board members, school administrators, teachers, parents, and other community members. In this paper, the NAGC cites long, consistent, and overwhelmingly positive research as evidence that talented and gifted students should be grouped together for the sake of their academic as well as their social and emotional well-being. Here's a sample of what the NAGC concludes. Grouping options should be available at each stage of development in a gifted child school program, from primary through secondary. Grouping gifted learners tends to be the least restrictive environment in which their learning can take place, and the most effective and efficient means for schools to provide more challenging coursework, thereby giving these children access to advanced content and providing them with a peer group. Grouping allows gifted children access to learning at the level and complexity they need. A few myths about gifted education. Myth: gifted students in a mixed ability class make everyone else in the class smarter by providing a role model or a challenge. Truth: average or below average students do not look to the gifted students in the class as role models. They are more likely to model their behavior on those with similar capabilities who are coping well in school. Seeing a student at a similar performance level succeed motivates students because it adds to their own sense of ability. Watching or relying on someone who is expected to succeed in the first place does little to increase a struggling student's sense of self-confidence. Similarly, gifted students benefit from interactions with peers at similar performance levels. Myth: teachers challenge all the students, so gifted kids will be fine in the regular classroom. Truth: many teachers are unfamiliar with the unique needs of gifted children and do not know how best to serve them in the classroom. The National Research Center on Gifted and Talented found that 61% of classroom teachers had no training in teaching highly able students. Myth: gifted education is elitist. Truth: gifted education provides for children who need special challenge. These children come from all neighborhoods and all economic backgrounds. Children from poor families often need gifted education the most, because their families are unable to provide enrichment opportunities for them. Also, minority and poor parents often do not have high educational and career expectations for their children. If we are to keep our country in a place where people can achieve regardless of their economic background, gifted education can help us. This is from a book written by Sylvia Rim and UW Professor of Educational Psychology, Gary Davis. I have also the handouts for the board.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Roger Hayes, followed by Monica Messina.
Hello, I'm Roger Hayes. I'm actually speaking in support of Bonnie and Laura to urge intelligent efforts on the TAG program. I'm a parent, a couple kids in the Madison School District, and I don't want our teachers to have to work any harder than they are already. I'm hoping that by applying the research that has been cited, that the district can take full advantage of those kids and give them good opportunities. Because I completely agree that the special ed model is the wrong model for gifted kids, that the existing IEPs impose extra work on the classroom teachers to no good effect, or to little good effect perhaps, and that a grouping model is going to be a lot more efficient, a lot more fun for the kids, and a lot more fun for the teachers, and it won't make it punitive. It won't lead us into resource contention. With the special ed model, parents are in conflict with the school district, parents are in conflict with each other, competing for scarce resources. If we can figure out a way to give those kids what they need to be successful without that being an extra drain on the classroom teachers and an extra drain on the district, then I think that would entirely be a good thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Monica Messina, followed by Jean Parks.
I'm also a parent in the district with three kids in different schools. And first, I want to say, in reference to the TAG forum that Bonnie was talking about, where there was such a great turnout, that was really exciting to see so many families show up for the TAG forum. And it's also great to see so many parents here tonight. I am beginning to have hope that the broken TAG system in our district can be repaired. And I have become part of this effort because I'm heartened that there's a large group of families who want to see TAG program happen for a large cohort of children in the district. Under the district's old guard, we knew that only a few kids would get TAG programming, and those were the ones who scored very high on achievement, not ability tests, whose parents knew how to work the system, or maybe they knew the right threats to use. Basically, the system pitted parents against parents because we knew the resources were limited and even hidden from us. We knew that we would be forced to fight and to climb over others if we were going to see our kids thrive in the district. And some of us chose not to take that route. Just last week, we parents of current fifth graders received Barbie Klavikowski's letter, which opened up the College for Kids opportunity to all interested kids. This kind of equanimity and transparency is heartening. Yet much more needs to be happening, and it must happen in the schools and very quickly for current students. Frankly, the old guard system was sickening. We saw how politics always took precedence, and as a result, we really don't know who we can trust in the district. So as we now address the board, I would simply ask that you let us know soon and with honesty what we can expect from this board in the way of help and follow-up so that we parents can act and plan accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Jean Parks, followed by the final speaker of the evening, Sherry Galitzer.
Good evening. I have two children in the district, a daughter who's at West and has been served very well by the district, and I thank them for that. I have a second daughter, and this letter is mainly about her. I'd like you to know that my husband and I had to make a very tough decision last spring. We chose to pull our 10-year-old daughter, Faye, from MMSD. Our story is simple, and I'm afraid not too uncommon. For several years, we suspected that Faye was very bright and was not learning at an appropriate pace. She wasn't unhappy, but she certainly wasn't an inspired learner. I contacted TAG and asked for help. That got us nowhere. I was assured that Faye's elementary teachers would be able to engage, to keep her engaged, and that their TAG support was not warranted. Fast forward 12 months, and I still had that nagging feeling. Faye needed more. An ability test administered by a school psychologist confirmed that. Faye needed more. Funny enough, with test scores in hand, I wasn't at all confident that MMSD was going to be able to challenge her or to effectively support my daughter's classroom teachers. As of last spring, it was pretty clear that MMSD's TAG program didn't really exist. Sure, there were a few elementary kids who had the privilege of an accelerated math curriculum, but that was about it. My husband and I knew that we needed to take action. We needed to find an environment that was respectful of Faye's intelligence and that made her seven-hour day count. We transferred her to Eagle, and so far it's been a very good move. I'm here tonight to ask you to do the very best you can to make the day count for Faye's friends that are still with MMSD. Please make it your mission to see that MMSD's bright students are challenged appropriately and that they thrive. MMSD needs to figure out how to fairly identify its best and brightest, and MMSD needs to figure out how to teach them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our final speaker this evening is Sherry Galitzer.
Hi, I'm Sherry Galitzer. As I think all of you know, I have three young children in the system. And I guess all I want us to say tonight is, with all the compassion and all the admiration I have for you guys sitting up there, with all sincerity, to please take the time and with thought and heart, think about what Bonnie and everyone said here tonight. After last week's report to the Performance and Achievement Committee, myself, along with many others, just really had this feeling of one step forward, two steps back. You know, after hours in strategic planning committees, steering committee, conversations, hearing that we're gonna formalize the existing system was surprising. And I guess I want to ask you to think about, you know, what are the forces that keep pushing back? And where's the leadership and commitment to push forward? I ask you to ask for specifics and clarity. For example, can we as parents expect our kids to be put in, have cluster grouping and flexible groups in their classrooms next year without us having to go to the school and see if they might do it? What happened to the Javits grant application? What is our definition of TAG? Is it the 2% or 15%? And if it's the 2%, what about those literally thousands of kids that don't have parents here or at home to help them navigate the current system that we've had that's being formalized that also has been out of compliance? And finally, I ask that you require a professional, honest, open, transparent discussion about the conflicting needs and best practices that exist, so that all does mean all for all the kids, especially those that don't have parents here to talk for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that concludes the public appearances portion of our meeting this evening.